Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I can't figure out what to do, Marcia was saying over the phone to her friend Betsy. Jason is only 2 months old, but he just seems to do nothing but cry. Yes, I know babies cry a lot, but he just never seems to settle down. Eventually, of course, he sleeps. That's a relief for all of us, but we're tearing our hair out over here. Timmy is a little doll. He does little tricks and sometimes does distract him, but Jason is really trying my patience. Yes, I remember that car ad. Maybe I'll just have to keep the baby in the car or buy one of those big recreational vehicles and just drive him around all the time. I just can't imagine what to do if this continues. From a parent's perspective, what can we do to help fussy babies? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. This is an exciting day as we once again greet our guests who are internationally recognized experts on sleep, discipline, calming a fussy baby, and just about everything else about raising young children. Dr. T. Barry Brazelton is Clinical Professor of Pediatrics Emeritus at Harvard Medical School and Professor of Psychiatry and Human Development at Brown University. Having dedicated his life to helping children and their parents, he has established touchpoint centers in more than 42 communities in 22 states. He's a famed advocate for children and their parents and has written books that have sustained parents through their child rearing for several generations. In the fall of 2002, Dr. Brazelton received the World of Children Award, akin to a Nobel Prize for child advocacy. Dr. Brazelton has 4 grown children and 6 grandchildren. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Brazelton. It's a lot to say, isn't it?
That's a lot.
Dr. Joshua Sparrow is Dr. Brazelton's close colleague in the National and International Touchpoints programs. A child, adolescent, and general psychiatrist, he is senior consultant for inpatient psychiatry at Children's Hospital in Boston, on the faculty of Harvard Medical School, and associate director of the Brazelton Touchpoints Center. Dr. Sparrow authors a New York Times Syndicate column, Families Today, and lectures extensively in many different countries on child and adolescent development. He has a daughter and a son. We're so glad you can be back with us, Dr. Sparrow.
It's a delight to be here again with both of you.
Your latest series on sleep, discipline, and calming a fussy baby touches on 3 areas that give parents headaches. What do you think is the most important thing parents of babies need to remember?
I think they need to remember that infancy is such a short part of your life and such a real opportunity to get to know that baby, to understand what that baby's trying to tell you. And then the next question is, well, how will I do that? Well, watch the baby. The baby is so clear in her signals about when you're on the right track. She lets you know by her face, by her whole body. When you're on the wrong track, gaze aversion, turning away from you, all sorts of issues like crying inconsolably are right there to tell you. And I think, you know, you say, well, is this serving a purpose? Yes, it's pushing parents to learn what that baby is all about.
It seems that at some point all babies go through a period when they just can't go to sleep easily or they wake in the night and have a terrible time settling down. What would you advise?
I think those are terribly important times because they're really pointing to something that I call touch points, times in a child's development when the child sort of falls apart, regresses just before there's a major spurt in development. And this regression is a very powerful time for the baby to reorganize, get ready to take off. The trouble is that parents at this point feel, oh, gosh, what have I done wrong? What am I doing that's not right for the kid? Otherwise, he wouldn't be waking or crying or whatever he might be doing. And I call it touch points because as somebody who wants to support parents, if you're there to touch into the system and give parents the information that this is a healthy, normal stage of development, they never forget you. It's just so important to them.
I think that's probably the hardest thing of parenting is to know what is normal. Of course, that's a loaded word. But if we all start parenting not knowing what's appropriate for each stage, then if our expectations are really out of line, we can do a lot of damage.
When children are tired, but they don't go to sleep, it drives everybody crazy. Mm-hmm. And parents don't know, well, should I let him cry? I can't let him cry. He's my baby. He'll feel like I'm not paying any attention if I let him cry.
Well, I think that leads back to your initial anecdote that, you know, a baby between the ages of 3 and 12 weeks has a period of crying every day that seems interminable to parents. At the end of the day, they fall apart, and they cry, and they cry, and they cry. And people call it colic. They think it's pain. It isn't pain. Pain goes, wah, apnea, wah, apnea. This isn't like that. This is wah, 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 wah. And it's, to me, it's a way of letting off steam and getting reorganized for the next 24 hours. Well, if parents get anxious and interfere and begin to overload this already overloaded baby, then they prolong it, and it seems forever.
It's interesting because parents can almost, if they can find a parallel in how we go through a day, it seems like it might be helpful. And when you were saying at the end of the day babies are letting off steam, it's ironic in a way that it happens at a time when adults are ready to let off steam.
Sure.
We've all sort of had it. We want somebody to take care of us. So if we can remember that the babies are basically doing the same thing.
I think it's also difficult for parents today to let children put themselves to sleep because so many parents are deprived of the time that they want with their children.
That's a whole issue, isn't it? That parents are feeding their children later, letting them stay up later, that whole business. That must play havoc with a kid's schedule.
Co-sleeping is up to 50%, we think. And, you know, what is it saying? Well, it's saying that people can't give their kids up at night after they've been away from them all day. What right do we have to tell them they can't do that or that it isn't right? When most of the world co-sleeps anyway.
And has for most of history.
Yeah.
When I was a medical student and didn't get to see my young son very much, I was kind of delighted when he'd wake up in the middle of the night because it was the only chance I had to see him. And of course, he had terrible problems sleeping for a long time.
You complained all day the next day to your colleagues.
No, I didn't.
What about nightmares? How do we treat nightmares at different ages?
I'm not sure that they are all that different. For one thing, you don't hear a lot about nightmares from most children until about 3 years of age, although I remember having a nightmare when I was 2.5 about a movie called Babes in Toyland, which had these terrifying trees with faces that would pull up their roots and walk. And my son, actually, this is a long time ago, when he was about 18 months old, I was in medical school. We were in Ireland, and I was doing my rotation in OBGYN there, and we took him to the Dublin Zoo and came home, and as he had this problem with sleeping, woke up, but in tears, actually hysterical, and he came out and he said in French, because my wife is French, he said, "Popotame ouvre grand la bouche," which means the hippopotamus is opening his mouth wide.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was 19 months old, and we were kind of flabbergasted that he had already taken an event from the day at the zoo that had overwhelmed him and it turned it into a nightmare. But I don't think that dreams are ever all that different. They're always about some event that's happened that doesn't quite get digested, that gets reshaped in a dream because you haven't finished with it when it first happened to you.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow about sleep, discipline, and calming a fussy baby.
Barry, you might want to talk a little bit about nightmares at age 4 and 5.
The normal time for nightmares to appear and become a family issue is the ages of 4 and 5, when aggressive feelings are coming to the surface. And also the child is beginning to be very aware of their effect on their environment. And these two together make aggression a rather frightening thing for a child. You know, will I lose control? Will I really dominate my family? Will I get away with all this? Is going on in a child's head during the day every time they feel aggressive or go overboard. And so, of course, not maybe, but of course they carry it over into the night. And of course they're witches in the closet and monsters under the bed. And of course they need more support for this, because they're so frightened of their own feelings inside. And a parent deserves to be aware that this is what's causing these nightmares normally, and so then can go in and look under the bed, look in the closet, and say, you and I both know they're not there, but we know why you're feeling like this. And then also, I think parents need to be aware that this is a particularly important time for modeling, for the child to be able to model his aggressive feelings on the parent's aggressive feelings. And whenever they nearly run over an old lady on the street and say, you know, I could have hit that woman. She walked right in front of me, but I didn't. I stopped the car. And the child will look up at you with wonder, and you say, you know, I had to stop myself, because I was so angry. And the child over time begins to be aware that I can handle my aggressive feelings like daddy does or like mommy does. And this is a very important stage of development, a very important touch point, if you will.
You know, there are two classic children's books that talk about this phenomenon of a child discovering their own angry feelings at this age. One is Maurice Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are, of course. And the other, I don't remember the author, but I know we have it in our references in our book on sleep, but it's called There's a Monster in My Closet, which is all about looking, as Barry was saying, for the monster under the bed and in the closet when
my grandchild Addie got me to read that over and over and over every day. Every time she came over, she said, Papa, will you read me Monster in My Closet? And I said, is the monster still there? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, let's read it together.
You know, I think helping a child to master their fears by facing where they come from, which means getting to know their own emotional life, including their angry feelings, really serves a larger purpose. Because if we can help young children with that, I think we're preparing them to not be manipulated by politicians who use fear to influence.
That's interesting. A little bit more empowerment, which we all kind of need.
Well, FDR said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And we start helping children with that, I think, at around age 4.
It's a very important time for parents to understand it and be ready to participate.
Have you seen the commercial on television? It's a commercial for shades on a window. And the father, the child doesn't quite want to lie down yet until the father activates the monster shield. And he goes over and he opens and shuts the blinds a few times, and it's all activated. And no monsters can get in tonight, and the kid goes to sleep.
Yeah,
very cute.
Great.
Later in the commercial, the child gets up and tries it himself, makes the same noises, opening and closing it, see if he can control it. It's very cute.
You know, another thing comes up right at that time, and that is the very powerful identification with one parent at a time. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he gets up like the father does and pulls the blinds down, I bet if you watched him, he would be doing just exactly the same
way.
Thing
and the same noises.
Did.
Yes.
Just wonderful if you think about it.
Well, and this is part of what children that age are afraid of, that they have nightmares about, is how powerful they are in imitating one parent and then seducing the other.
Yeah, scary, I'm sure. Yeah.
In Calming Your Fussy Baby, The Brazelton Way, you mention an interesting experiment, having a mother and baby alone in a room and then having a father and baby alone. Can you describe that and explain its significance?
Well, it's the first real evidence of cognitive development to me, at 2 months, 6 to 8 weeks, if you put a baby in a baby chair, I can look at a finger or a toe or mouth or eyes and over a 2 or 3 minute period tell you whether it's the mother, father, or a stranger playing with that baby. It's so powerful. And the reason is that mothers always do the same thing with a small baby. In a baby chair, they go in and they sit down quietly and they say, "How are you doing?" And the baby goes, "Ooh." They say, "Give me another one. Ooh." And one more. Ooh. Meanwhile, fingers, toes, mouth, eyes, even heart rate go boom, 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 boom. They go out and come back toward the mother. Fathers never behave like mothers. They go in and sit down in front of a small baby, sit back and start poking. And they poke from the bottom to the top. And the baby goes, whoop. And then they go, boom, 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 boom. And so by the 6 to 8 weeks, everything about a baby changes when the father looms in sight. Fingers start jerking, toes start jerking, eyes go up, mouth goes up, everything goes up, heart rate goes boom, 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 waiting for the father to play with them. And with a stranger, it's just a hopeless mixture of both. But to me, it's so powerful in terms of how early a child recognizes the kind of input that each parent is going to give them that is so critical. And I use it in my observations of parents with their children. I let them see that the child really knows them. And mothers always say, "Will she remember me if I go off to work during the day?" Look at what she tells you with her body. She knows you when you get back. And with a father, the same thing. Fathers need to hear this.
Yes.
Many parents remember with dismay a baby who just wouldn't be comforted. Besides tearing our hair out, what should we do?
Well, Dr. Brelson always suggests getting some cheap plates and throwing them at the wall.
New devices.
I always suggested having a corner that was at risk and having cheap glasses, and you just go over and smash them in the corner rather than smashing the baby.
Right. That's true. We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parent's Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today we're talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow about sleep, discipline, and calming a fussy baby, their new books.
Barry, talk about the research you did on fussy babies between the ages of 3 and 12 weeks and what you found.
Well, I did this with a bunch of mothers in Cambridge whose husbands were working, and they were frustrated mothers at home in those days. And they kept me these detailed records of a 24-hour period over the first 3 months. And about 80% of these babies fussed every evening in a way that we talked about earlier. And there was no way you could cut this off. You could drive them over a rough road, which you suggested in your anecdote, or you could put them on the washing machine, or you could turn on the television real loud, and they'd stop for a minute. But when you quit, they'd start in again. And the mothers told me then that after this fuss period, they slept better, ate better for the next 24 hours. So it seemed to be serving a real purpose. And my own interpretation was that it's an immature nervous system that takes in information during the day but can't quite utilize all of it. And so it builds up and has to blow at the end of the day. When it's blown, then the child is ready for the next day. And then if you watch for these same periods every day, at 3 months they begin to coo, talk, do other things, smile. So it's a transition right into social behavior.
So So they just change their repertoire for this part of the day.
And I think this is a representation of what's going to happen later. You asked about fussing that you couldn't really manage. Don't you think all children fall apart at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm.
And they
fall
fuss,
apart.
And you pick them up and comfort them, and then when you put them down, they start fussing again. And it's almost as if they have to fall apart before they can get reorganized to sleep, to get going for the next 24 hours. So I think all of us do the same thing.
The other thing that those observations say, though, about what a parent can do, aside from tearing their hair out or throwing glasses at a wall, is to not do too much, because when a parent feels this desperate kind of obligation to soothe a baby between the ages of 3 weeks and 12 weeks who just won't settle down, you really can do too much. And if the crying at the end of the day period is partly because of this sensory overload, this overstimulation that Dr. Brazelton is describing, then in your efforts to calm them, you may just overload them all the more, and you may make matters worse. And you won't know it, because while you're overstimulating them, they may be quiet for the moment to attend to the stimulation. But when you stop, as you said, they'll go back to the crying, but you may prolong it because you've overloaded them even more. Yes. So not doing too much is maybe part of the answer for that period.
Sandy, you said that it seemed like a coincidence that this was the time of the day when the mother was falling apart, too. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think adults fall apart at the end of the day just like the babies. And when the baby gives you a cue like that that you can't handle, of course you're going to be aware. Oh, my gosh, I feel jumpy, too. I used to recommend martinis to mothers at the end of the day.
No wonder they all love you.
Well, we've talked about tearing our hair out, and we've talked about sleep and so forth. We haven't talked about discipline, and we have also Discipline the Brazelton Way, which is a wonderful book. So when it comes to discipline, what do you think the most important thing is for parents to remember?
Discipline is the second most important thing you give a child. Discipline means teaching, not punishment. Love comes first, but a child needs to know where limits are. A spoiled child, to me, is one that doesn't know where limits are, and they keep looking for them. And when they finally get them, and they look up at you gratefully, Selma Freiberg, who was a wonderful, wonderful woman, said, a child who isn't disciplined doesn't feel loved. So I think you have to remember that, because parents today who are away all day say, I can't be a disciplinarian at the end of the day. I want to love this baby. And yet, what does the baby do? She always sets it up for the mother to have to step in and say, no, you can't do that. And so
this
is
not only with babies, is it?
Yeah. The baby's saying to her, you know, I missed you all day, and now I want to have some limits, as well as the caring that you're offering me. So I think these are very important issues. And I guess my question is to each parent, how do you feel comfortable about discipline? Because it takes a long, long time. Each parent needs to get a comfort level with their own way of disciplining a child, so she doesn't feel like it's deserting the child or turning against the child or any of the things that come up when you discipline a child.
Well, it's hard. I think also when kids are a certain age, if you use rules that then mean they can't do this or they can't do that, and they say things like, I hate you and all that, you know, and you've just been gone for the whole day and then you have this whole thing, it's very difficult.
In addition to these three new books of yours, Sleep the Brazelton Way, Calming Your Fussy Baby the Brazelton Way, and Discipline the Brazelton Way, do you have any other resources that you would suggest to our listeners who are going to be looking into these topics further?
Each of the books actually has a list of resources and references in the back of it that was really designed for parents, so that's what I would say. Just parents, take a look at.
Yeah,
I think different ages need to be respected for having different motives, different underlying reasons for the kind of issues, sleep or discipline or crying. And so just to be sweeping in making a recommendation would be missing the point of looking at what's going on in the baby behind this. And what's going on in the parent behind this? Because parents bring their own past experiences to this, the ghosts from their nursery, and they have to reconcile those with the child's behavior in order to hit an appropriate way of dealing with things.
And that's why in each of these books, the first chapter is called The Touch Points of Sleep, or The Touch Points of Discipline, or The Touch Points of Crying as a Communication, because it's an effort to show how each of these areas really changes as a child develops over time.
Touch points are times when they fall apart, and you need to understand this falling apart so you can help the child with the next stage of development.
And the hope is that the parents don't fall apart in the process.
Well, I think parents inevitably do fall apart, and part of what we try to do is to help parents recognize that that is understandable and comes from their passion and caring for their child, and just as their child will reorganize and move on to a new level, so will they.
We have a saying called value passion wherever you find it, and it goes with something like this. If a mother comes in and says, I could smash this child against the wall, don't call a social worker. Say to her, isn't it wonderful how passionate you get about some of these things? And her eyes will fill up and she'll start weeping.
She'll realize.
Yeah, she'll realize.
If we could only remember to say that to our children when they start having a temper tantrum, when they start getting upset they don't have the car keys, and say, we're so glad that you're passionate about this.
It's a wonderful thing to think of.
Well, how fortunate we are that when they come to our area, Dr. T. Berry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow visit with us on important issues for parents of young children. Thank you both again for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's
great
you.
To be here again.
Our gifts for our first callers are autographed copies of T. Berry Brazelton and Joshua Sparrow's three new books, Calming Your Fussy Baby the Brazelton Way, Discipline the Brazelton Way, and Sleep the Brazelton Way. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 183. Again, it's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. Tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, our books, are also available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.